This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In this talk, Reggie discusses how transformation can occur through the intimacy of human relationships. He explains that there is powerful intelligence in human desire. It awakens in us a longing to unite with experience in a raw and direct way. This talk is from Buddhist Tantra, an audio course produced in 2003 by Sounds True.
To begin with, I want to say a few things about what Tantra is historically to give you a frame. I don't intend to spend a great deal of time talking about that as we move along, but I think it's helpful and important to know where Tantra fits in to the general range of Buddhist spirituality. Tantra, to begin with, means continuity. It comes from a Sanskrit word which means to weave and to carry a thread through a piece of cloth. What Tantra refers to is the underlying thread of sanity that exists within each human being. Most of us spend most of our lives diverted, distracted, and obsessed by our particular projects of the hour, of the day, of the month, of the year. And all too soon, we wake up one morning, and that's our last day. And then our life is over. And the question is, at the end of our life, when we look back, did we live? Did we experience our life? Did we feel our human existence at the deepest possible level? Tantra means continuity, and it refers to a continuity of discontinuity within our habitual life. And by that I mean, whatever projects we carry on, there always comes an end. Any relationship that we have ends eventually. Good health deteriorates eventually. Jobs come to an end. Whatever well-being we have comes to an end. So there's always a sense in life that this is a temporary situation. Whatever we're doing is temporary. And the question is there anything within us that is not temporary? Is there anything that goes on and on through all of the successes and failures, through all of the pain and pleasure, through all of the feeling good about oneself and feeling terrible? Is there anything that continues? Is there anything fundamental and underlying our person? Tantra means the continuity of this underlying quality of our life, which is our basic state of being. It's a state that is immensely open, immensely clear, naturally compassionate, and completely and fully awake. Most of us spend most of our lives completely unaware that there's a more fundamental dimension to our lives. If we would only wake up and only begin to learn how to touch into that fundamental nature, it would change everything. That fundamental nature is what Tantra is referring to. Tantra, continuity, the continuity of our basic nature, of our inherent state of being. And the purpose of tantric tradition is to enable us to begin to experience life from that depth, rather than in terms of one superficial situation after another. At this point, in order to give you an overview of the territory we're going to explore, I want to summarize six themes that characterize the Buddhist Tantra. These themes will be explored in much more depth and detail as we go through our program. But it's important in the beginning for you to have an understanding of what the Tantra is as a spiritual tradition. To begin with, the Tantric tradition is a development of Buddhism. Buddhism arose in India in the 6th century BC, and it survived in India for roughly 1700 years until 1200 AD, when the Muslims destroyed institutionalized Buddhism. During that time, several major orientations developed. The early Buddhist traditions, based on the Four Noble Truths, and in the modern West, we have experience of that through the teachings of the Vipassana movement, Vipassana meditation. Secondly, the Mahayana, which is known as the Great Vehicle, which developed about 100 BC in India, a very profound tradition that spread largely to North Asia and East Asia, and we have experience in our culture of that in Zen, a very profound meditative lineage. And then finally, the Tantric style of Buddhism, which developed probably very early, but did not appear on the stage of history until about the end of the 7th century in North India and South India. The Tantric tradition itself represents a unique style of practicing Buddhism. As we shall see, it's based on meditation, as are all the Buddhist traditions, but some of its particular genius comes through in aspects of working with one state of mind that other traditions don't emphasize. Several of them are quite interesting, and we will be looking at them in detail, including the use of visualization, visualizing oneself as a Buddha, the use of ritual, which seems fairly far removed from meditation practice, but nevertheless, as we'll see, a very powerful vehicle. And then thirdly, working with the body through yoga and what are known as the inner yogas. And this is where the topic of sexuality comes up, because one works with sexual energy in the body in the process of transformation. So the Tantra is unique in those respects and some other ones. And it's through this program I want to periodically give you a sense of how the Tantra is different and also the same as the Vipassana and the Zen movements. Tantric Buddhism went to Tibet from the 8th to the 12th or 13th centuries AD from North India at a time when the Tibetans were interested in importing Indian traditions, in particular writing and then later Buddhist traditions and then finally the Tantric traditions. The Tantra survives in Tibet in a unique way. Even though it was taught elsewhere in Asia, it did not survive in its full form anywhere except in Tibet, although you do find forms of Tantra in Korean Buddhism and also Japanese Buddhism that represent particular schools and orientations. So having given you that little bit of background, I want to go through these six features of the Tantric orientation. So the first one is an emphasis on direct experience. Very often in our religious traditions, particularly in the West, we tend to identify religion with belief or with correct doctrine. And in our culture at large, there's a tremendous emphasis on intellectual knowledge, on being facile with concepts, on being good with one's head. This kind of orientation is very much part and parcel of modern urbanized life. In the ancient indigenous traditions and the more traditional cultures of the world, one survived based on using a variety of human faculties. Yes, the intellect is important, but the faculty of feeling in most cultures has been a very important part of the survival of a culture and managing of life. Feeling in our culture is marginalized. Sensory experience, the experience of the senses, very important in other cultures, in pre-modern cultures. If you live in the Amazon jungle and your senses are not extremely well developed and attuned, you'll be bitten by a snake or you'll be eaten by some predatory animal. Intuition, the ability to see the future, very important. The studies of human faculties among human populations suggest that in the modern West, or in any culture, intuitive people, people who can really read the future, represent a very small percentage of the total human population, but they're extremely important. It's something like 2 or 3% of any human population are people with a highly developed intuitive faculty. In most cultures, the intuitive faculty is essential to reading the future and getting a sense of where the culture needs to go, even when people with highly developed senses, good feeling, and good intellect, even when they can't see the future, intuitive people can. In our culture, as I mentioned, feeling is marginalized. Sensory experience is relatively irrelevant because we live in completely controlled environments like urban environments. And intuition is regarded as problematic because our society is so standardized that people who are seeing things and see how things could be different are actually threatening to the status quo. In the tantric experience, the whole point of tantra is to develop the totality of one's person, all of one's senses, all of one's intelligence, all of one's awareness need to be developed and opened and refined and matured. This leads to an experience of reality that we could call direct experience. It's experience that is not mediated through concepts. It's direct, it's naked. An indirect experience, there's a feeling of fulfillment. When we experience things through concepts, which most of us do for most of our lives, everything seems kind of watered down, habitual, and routine, and familiar, and uninteresting. On the other hand, when we learn how to work from a deeper part of our being, we experience life with a kind of rawness and nakedness that may be terrifying, it may be compelling, but it is utterly fulfilling. And this is the first point of what Tantra is seeking to do. It's developing our human person so that we can experience life and are willing to experience life and know how to experience life directly. The second point is that the Tantra is non-theistic, as are all of the major Buddhist traditions. Theism is the idea that what is good and what is valuable is outside. It's somewhere else. It's not within us, and it's not within our present life. And the tantric approach basically says that's very questionable. When you look at our modern life, you can see how much people feel impoverished and inadequate as individuals. Most people in modern cultures feel that who they are and what their lives are insufficient and inadequate, and that they need something from the outside in order to attain some kind of human fulfillment. This kind of approach is a theistic approach, and it takes its roots in our Judeo-Christian traditions, which say that God is outside. And in the Christian tradition, that we need an intermediary to save us from ourselves and put us in touch with what is real, put us in touch with salvation. We are, of ourselves, completely incapable of actually finding the deepest fulfillment of human life. We're like babies. The non-theistic tradition of Buddhism says all of the heavens and hells, all of the most profound fulfillments of human life are already within us. They already exist in our deepest state of being, and all we have to do is take off the clothes, take off the mask, and there it is. Therefore, the whole process of meditation is a process of stripping, stripping away our pretense, stripping away our strategies, and reducing us down to the basic person that we are. You could say that we are like an eagle who has been dressed up in a coat and a hat and boots and gloves, and he or she is kept in a cage on the edge of a cliff. and the cliff is a high one, and in front of the cliff is a boundless open space, blue sky and sun shining. And the eagle thinks that he's a person dressed up in these clothes. And one day, somebody opens the door of the cage, and the eagle sheds his boots and his gloves and his coat and his hat, and he leaps out into the space and begins to fly. And he finds in that moment the existence for which he was born. And we are like that eagle. We are dressed up in a lot of extraneous and ridiculous outfits that don't represent who we are. And as long as we keep them on, we're never going to discover our true nature. The process of meditation and the process of the non-theistic tradition of Tantra is that we get rid of, step by step, all of those extraneous accoutrements. We let them fall step by step. We throw them off into the space. And then we leap out into the space ourselves, and we catch that wind, and we fly up into the sky, and we experience the deep blue, blue space and the bright sun. The third feature of Tantra is an emphasis on the body. We live in a culture that is phenomenally, remarkably, extraordinarily disembodied. People tend to look at their bodies like they look at their cars or their house. Their bodies are just another possession that should be used and manipulated to produce the greatest possible effect, to impress other people, to increase one's status, and so on. We live largely in terms of our heads. Our heads are our house, our palace, and our entire world is composed of all the servants and all of the masters running around in our head. But we have little or no sense of our bodies. This causes tremendous dislocation in our sense of being human. We feel no connection to our world. We feel little connection to other people. We make ourselves ill. And we lose all of the wisdom that is continually arising in our body. And if we ignore the wisdom of our body entirely, as some people do, we begin to have accidents, and then we get sick and die. Within the tantric tradition, the body is the temple of enlightenment. As we'll see later when we explore this particular aspect of the Buddhist Tantra, within the body are all of the power and the compassion and the wisdom of enlightenment. If we know how to explore our body, if we know how to sense our physical person, then that is virtually the same thing as the realization that the Tantra talks about. And as I mentioned before, much of the work in Tantra is working with the body, awakening the body, bringing the body to life, and finding out how it is with us and what it means to have a body. The fourth theme of Buddhist Tantra is an emphasis on the feminine and on feminine energy and symbolism. Within the Buddhist Tantra, the woman is said to be the prime exponent of enlightened wisdom. Strangely enough, in our culture, we live in a world that is almost entirely masculinized. It's a world of utility, a world of bureaucracy, a world of rules and regulations, a world of the bottom line, a world of practicality. These are not in and of themselves problematic values. every culture has had to pay attention to these values, which are more on the side of application and accomplishment. However, in most cultures, and especially in the tantric traditions and in Tibetan culture, the only way in which the values of practicality and utility, organization, institutionalization work is when they acknowledge and, if I may say so, with all due respect, bow down to the feminine principle of space, intelligence, and warmth. When the masculine is preeminent, the world becomes solid and unchanging and demonic. When the masculine and feminine are in relationship and balanced, then the masculine becomes the vehicle of enlightenment, the vehicle of compassion, the vehicle of a sane and loving situation within human society. Much of the work in the Buddhist Tantra is balancing the feminine and the masculine within each practitioner, whether that person is a man or a woman. And interestingly enough, this balance reflects itself in the way in which tantric people are in the world. And here we see an important aspect of tantric sexuality. By engaging the other, one is in fact finding in the other an aspect of oneself. When you love another person, you are actually loving a dimension of reality, which is a dimension of most fundamentally of your own mind. It's not introverted because we can only find ourselves through working with others. Nevertheless, having sex with someone else is, in the tantric perspective, a very profound interchange of energy, and it leads us out from ourselves into a fuller state of being, which is a state of balance of the masculine and feminine. A fifth theme of the Buddhist Tantra is awakening us to the world that we live in. In our modern industrial consumeristic society, we take the external world for granted, the world of nature, the world of animals, the world of the environment, and we tend to look at it really as a dead piece of rotting flesh that just is there for our consumption. From the tantric perspective, the entire world is alive, vibrant, and intelligent. It's said that the Buddha nature exists in all things. We'll talk about this more later, but the principal notion here is that we human beings are not the only presences on the planet in terms of wisdom and in terms of a journey. The rivers, the mountains, the atmosphere, trees, animals, the entire world that we live in is alive, and to the extent that we make a relationship with it, we become human beings. To the extent that we don't, we cut ourselves off from a source of much of our life and we become dead. And then the final theme is an interesting one. It has to do with the experience of the world and the experience of reality as being ever deepening and ever expanding. We live in a world that is very standardized. This is no particular blame on the Judeo-Christian tradition or modern culture. It's simply the natural evolution of our human success with the invention of agriculture leading down to the Industrial Revolution, the Technological Revolution, and the urbanizing of the planet. But that whole process has led us to be a very standard society where everybody more and more is expected to look the same, feel the same, and think the same. The tantric tradition basically says that our human experience is open, it's unending in terms of its development and possibilities, and there is no fixed and solid reality that can be or should be imposed on everybody. We, in fact, live in a world that is continually unprecedented, and we become human beings to the extent that we realize how unprecedented our lives are and how unprecedented each hour and each day is. Again, all of these themes are rooted in the fundamental notion that within us there is a tremendous amount of freedom, openness, intelligence, and appetite for experience. The tantric tradition acknowledges this appetite for experience and says that it is actually the gateway to wisdom and the gateway to transformation and the gateway to liberation. So in the sessions that follow, we will explore each of these themes and make our way through this geography that is the Buddhist Tantra.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Kechog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.